The following podcast is a production of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
All right. There are... Go ahead and get started here. What's going on? Okay, there are a couple handouts here that I will give you guys starting now. You can look at them a little bit. The first one is, it says, become a special agent on it. Take one, pass them around here. And the second one, which many of you may be interested in, is the Honors Internship Program. We run a lot of internship programs during the summer, maybe 20 or so. And this gives a little information about the biggest one, the one that pays, and the one that most people transition into becoming a special agent and such for. All right. That's that. There are some also little pamphlets there talking about becoming a special, or what you go through in Quantico while you are going through your 18 weeks or so to become a special agent. I can do my speaking part real quick here and open up for questions, which a lot of people probably have. As law students, when you graduate, you will automatically become eligible to be a special agent because of your background. If you look on one of those sheets here, when this passes around, it says become a special agent. Intelligence experience, I'm looking at the first paragraph here, computer science, IT, engineering, physical science, accounting, finance, law enforcement, military, foreign language, and many other disciplines. So law will automatically make you eligible to become an agent. I'm Special Agent Beasley, I forgot to say to begin with. But anything else, so if you have a foreign language or if you have those computer skills, all those things will make you more competitive to be a special agent. You don't have to actually practice law. You would just have to have a degree and have some years of experience doing anything else associated with it. The couple people that were lawyers in my class never actually, well, one of them was a prosecutor and a couple of prosecutors, but one never practiced law. You know, she got her degree and was eligible then. So that's how you would become eligible. And once again, if you speak a foreign language or anything else, it will make you more competitive. Now, the minimum qualification you'll have just by being a graduate from a law school. When we talk about being competitive, you talk about comparing yourself to other people. So if you live in D.C. at the time of when you apply, you're basically competing against other people in Washington, D.C. who have a law background to become a special agent. Now, it doesn't mean that you're going to work anything specific when you become a special agent. That's just a program under which you would become a special agent. Like when I became a special agent, I was a literature teacher at the time. And so I was competing with other people with that, at the time it was called the advanced degree background in Miami, where I'm from. So I was just competing with those people. So you'll be competing with other people with law backgrounds. Now, you'll be pretty competitive, obviously, coming from this school, but that's kind of the way it works out. The process by which you would, and the first thing I'm talking about is special agent jobs, then we'll get into other jobs that the Bureau has that some of you may be interested in if you do not want to be special agents. I just do special agent first. You would apply, and checking out your background and your resume and such, you would then be given a phase one test. They give it to maybe, 50% of the people that apply get a phase one test. It's more of a personality exam, you know, to try and see if you are capable of handling the job as a special agent. Those that pass the phase one will be given a phase two exam. Phase two is a written exam and a panel interview, kind of three or four agents, and then you, and they'll be shooting questions at you. And those who pass the phase two would go through the background, the physical fitness test, and the drug test, and all those other things that go along with becoming a special agent. After that, if you pass all those, you would be assigned to a class. So I was assigned to the class 03-04. So we were the fourth class to graduate in the year 2003. So when you're assigned to a class, you are from whatever city you come from. You are sent down to Quantico for 18 weeks of training. 11 classroom, you take 11 classes. To the best, when I came through, it was 11 classes. Firearms training and kind of a defensive tactics, kind of a hand-to-hand combat, those type of trainings. You'll basically go to class and do those type of defensive tactics or firearms all day, every day, for those 18 weeks. And all the classes have tests involved with them, and you have to maintain, I believe, an 85% average. All classes have tests. If you flunk one, then they allow you to retake it. If you flunk two tests the entire time you're there, you may take 20 tests. If you flunk two tests, they'll send you home. While you're there, you'll be also graded in firearms and in your physical defensive tactics. So it goes through pretty quick. It's a lot of information, but most people that get down there are bright enough. I'm sure everybody in this room is bright enough to take it. They're not the toughest classes, but it's still a lot of information that you'll get. And then while you're there, you will be assigned a first office. Now, as it is now, those people that come from, so if you guys, let's say, for sake of argument, everyone stayed in D.C. So your first office, I mean, you would be coming from Washington, D.C. People from D.C., New York, L.A., and San Francisco are allowed to return to those offices as of right now. And, you know, the FBI changes every 20 minutes, so that is today how it stands. Any other office, and when I came through, what D.C. and San Fran weren't even on there. It was just New York and L.A. because they always have a need for agents. You were not allowed to go back to where you came. So I come from Miami, so they send me to whatever city needs somebody at that time. So my first city was D.C. And then from there, once you get in D.C., whatever squad needs somebody at that time, you go to that squad. So my first squad was an extraterritorial terrorism team. And so that's what you cover until you get enough years under your belt and you can move on to something else. So I spent my first three years covering that particular crime, which was plane hijackings, embassy bombings and kidnappings and murder against American citizens in Africa, the Middle East, and India. So I was on a team that, you know, traveled off to those countries and investigated cases against U.S. citizens in those countries. Then I got a couple years under my belt and didn't want to do that anymore. So that's when I came over to start doing some other things. Once you get in, you get the years under your belt. It's very competitive getting in, as many of you could probably imagine. There is a lot of opportunity within the Bureau to move up, move around, move on. But it's very, very competitive. On the inside, it's just as competitive as it would be, as you can imagine. Some pretty bright people there, some pretty smart people. So that's where it is. We have, or the Bureau has, tuition reimbursement. So you can get your student loans paid for. You come in, I think you do a year, then you can apply. So I just applied to, so that's a student loan. Now, if you have loans from law school and you came into the Bureau under the law program, those loans will be eligible to be paid back. I came to, my loans were in, I don't even remember much of my undergrad, but from what I do remember, my loans were not what helped me become an agent, so they were not eligible. But now that I'm going back to get an additional master's degree, they pay that tuition also, as long as it can be justified to be towards my job. So there's a lot of help there education-wise and an awful lot of training on anything you want. Car driving training, you know, we have one of those closed tracks where you do all the driving stunts. I was sent to Mexico for several months to learn Spanish. They'll send you to, you know, all over the world to learn any language you want. They will train you in just about anything you want to do. So that's kind of the special agent track, and they will have some questions on that later on. Also with law, as you can probably imagine, we have a very, very large group of lawyers at headquarters that spends an awful lot of time trying to keep us out of trouble or trying to keep the bad guys in trouble. So those jobs come open fairly often. If you go to this FBI jobs.gov site that's on this any of these handouts, you will see you can search for available jobs. And when you do, this page comes up. And you can scroll down, and there aren't any now. I think there's a something that you guys probably would be overqualified for, I believe. Oh, yes, there's a legal administrative specialist, which you guys would not, you guys would be overqualified for. But there are a lot of legal jobs apart from special agent that you would all be qualified for. Those are probably fairly competitive also. I could only imagine how competitive they are. But each office has a CDC. It's that office lawyer. Now, being in D.C., we've got like five of them. So there are five lawyers that are special agents, but they're the FBI's lawyer in D.C. So every office has at least one person who was a lawyer before they became an agent, put their time in, and became a lawyer for that office. And I've dealt with them on many, many things when dealing with a lot of those terrorist matters and going to court and other situations that come up. You deal with them a lot. Headquarters being here in D.C. has like an entire floor, and you know how big that building is, of lawyers that work on the day-to-day, whatever it is that lawyers do day-to-day. Who knows? But those opportunities will also be there. I did not, there's a person who is a lawyer that is in the Bureau now that had something else came up with something today and he couldn't make it. But those opportunities are there to do similar work as you would do in a private company, a private law firm. You could do in the Bureau also. If you do go to that website, you will see that there are jobs there all over the country, not necessarily just here in the D.C. area, but anywhere in the country you would want to go or want to be. Let's see. I guess we can open up to some questions to try and see what else we can talk about. Anything? Yes. When I came in, it was, okay, before I got in, maybe 10, 15 years ago, when you came in, you were moved every 4 years. You were moved to we have what's called a small office, a medium office, and a large office. There are 15 large offices, you know, the New York, D.C., Boston, those type of cities. And then there may be 10 or 15 small offices, you know, the Nashville, you know, Nebraska, those small cities. There are 56 total offices, and the rest are in the middle. So before I got in, you moved every 4 years to a different size office. When I got in, it was, okay, wherever you go, your first office, you can stay there forever. Then about a year ago, they said, what we're going to do now is we're going to put people in the small offices, you know, offices that have under 200 agents, to when they first get out of Quantico so they can work on their skill sets. And then we will move them to the big offices after 3 years. So, like, I got D.C., which makes no sense whatsoever. I'm from Miami, and I get D.C. My roommate is from D.C. and gets Tampa. So, you know, we both got to our offices. Well, then they made that new policy where you move every 3 years, Tampa being a small office. They moved him to D.C. last year. That's the way it was. That's the way it is right now. Now, there's a list on which you can put your name to move around. They have a lot of specialty transfers. You know, we have a lot of pilots. We have a lot of computer techs. You know, they may, you know, Atlanta may say we need a pilot, so they'll put out a canvas and whatever pilot, or somebody may say we need a CDC, a lawyer, and so they put out a canvas like that. But besides that, the policy as it stands is you go to a small office and 3 years later you'll be moved to a large office. Now, you do get to rate them. You know, they say, like the first week when you get to Quantico, they say take all 56 offices and label them 1 to 56, 1 being where you want to go and 56 being Alaska, right? And you just, and then they go from, they will say they try to get you where you want to be, but it doesn't always work out like that. D.C. was number 16 for me on the list. Now, some people get 1, some people get 2, some people get 50. You know, it was a guy in my class that got 53. How he got that, it's beyond me, but what are you going to do? So that's how it stands right now. You don't have a lot of say at first over anything in the Bureau, anything you do. But as you get some time in, you do. I've been in 4 years, and I've changed jobs twice, which is a huge selling point because every single job, okay, we cover over 300 crimes. So every crime is a different job. So somebody that does civil rights doesn't do the same job as somebody that does terrorism or somebody that does gangs or somebody that does, you know, public corruption. You know, these are all different jobs. So as your years come in, you know, you can move to an entire different job and still be the same special agent with the same pension, with the you know, with the same pay. And a pension is at, you get full retirement as a special agent at the age of, at 20 years in, or, and mandatory retirement at the age of 57, so whichever comes first. So you get full pension. For myself, my pension kicks in at the age of 50. And so that'd be full retirement there. And it's a very good program. It's not, it's only 12,000 special agents in the country, in the world. So it's a very good pension program along with your 401 and whatever other things you need. The LEGAP position, okay, when I was on the squad that I told you about where we traveled, a legal attaché, okay, so I'm working a case out of New Delhi, India. The legal attaché is the FBI agent in New Delhi, and he covers most of that area out there. So if I'm working a case in New Delhi, when I fly over there, I'm working with him. Or if I'm here and I need somebody in India or New Delhi or Mumbai or Agra, anywhere over there interviewed, I would set a lead to the legal attaché in New Delhi, and he'd be the person that goes out and does it. He liaison, obviously, since we don't have any power over there, he basically liaisons or goes through the police department or whatever their federal police department in that country is. So it's a 14 or GS level 14 or 15 job, and you are the FBI representative in whatever country, and most countries have LEGATs, most major countries. Yes, LEGATs are always special agents. Now, there are other people in the office, but the LEGAT is a special agent, and most offices have several. Yes, you would go through the LEGAT program, and let's say, let's say you're going to the LEGAT program, let's say you want to go to, you know, Brazil or something like that. When that came up, you would apply for the LEGAT Brazil position. But they're all special agents. It really depends on the squad that you're on. Like the first squad I was on, you know, we traveled, so I'd be gone for a month at a time or something, and that would be tough if you had a family. But those people that work, you know, white-collar crime, those people that work money laundering, fraud, or the people that work on the computer recovery team. You know, we have people that, you know, when you see someone's computer, they go in and get all your information that you thought you erased. And the people that, you know, do those type of things, those are, it's a lot more office jobs for special agents than people would ever imagine. That's one of the things we try to point out. There are 800 special agents in D.C. Maybe 10 of them are the ones that go out and kick down doors every day and pull their gun out and bust people. Most other people work an office job at a desk. Now, there are times you go out and interview. There are times you do a lot of traveling, or there are times you do things, but those people that are the stereotypical television FBI agent are very few, you know. Now, 30 years ago, when we were taking down the mob and all those things, yes, more people were out in the streets. But now, you know, I mean, we go where the crime is. The crime's on the internet. The crime is in corruption, the crime is in white collar, you know, it's just not as much street crime as there used to be. And then with terrorism as big as it is now, I mean, these are for the most part desk jobs. Now, a lot of terrorist people, you go out a lot. I was on a second terrorist squad that and you know, the squads that, you know, may cover people who they believe are foreign spies. Those people may be out all the time following and watching people and writing reports on that. And another squad I was on, we were out always looking at suspicious people. But a lot of people have desk jobs. So those people have normal family lives. The days can get long, you know. Or when big events happen, you know, I mean, like when the sniper happened, or when leading up to the war in Iraq, and those type of instances, or 9/11 happens, you know, the days, we're running 18-hour shifts, you know, the days can get long there. But other than that, most people are doing desk work. Not, we won't call it desk work, because at any time you could go out and do something else. You know, it's not going to be like being a lawyer, but you know, you're not, but you know, you're doing something like that. I would assume, and don't quote me because I'm not very smart, but I will assume this. When you look at the backgrounds that they're looking for, computer science, engineering, physical science, these are people that have backgrounds in a process. I mean, this is the process by which you get this done. You know what I'm saying? And this process has strict rules, and, you know, they're to be followed. I think it's now, within that process or within these backgrounds, you are creative. I mean, as a lawyer, you know, you are creative as to how to, you know, work your case the way you want to work it. But at the same time, there are guidelines by which you must follow. And I would assume that that is what it is they're looking for, that those people that have that, those guidelines by which they follow. That's what I would assume, because, you know, it's not a lot of law work. I mean, if you look on these, very few, unless you're in accounting or such, you know, it's not going to be the same work that you did in that particular field of law. It is just, I mean, you have to have some understanding of the law, but, you know, we have lawyers in the building to really take care of that. You don't technically decide what it is or what section you apply under. When you go online to fill out you know, to become a special agent, you will tell them everything that you do, everything that you have. And then they will say, okay, this is the discipline under which you would fall. So, now if you fall under more than one discipline, that talks about being competitive. So yes, it would help you very much to have law and the language. Anything in a language is good. Doesn't matter what the language is. Because that's something that, and I always tell people this that are still in school, the language is something you can do, you know, on your own to make yourself fluent, to fall under the language category. So it would definitely make you more competitive. Yes.
What about a contract linguist position? What do they do?
Contract linguists, they do, first of all, contract means that they're not technically FBI employees. We have contract linguists and we have full-time linguists. They hire the full-time linguists from the pool of contract linguists. What they will do is this. Like, okay, I was working a case out of Germany. And I go over to Germany to sit in on some court proceedings. Now, I get these proceedings back. They're in German. That's what they do over there. So I take them to our contract linguist, and I say, can you translate them to English? Now, after that happens, there's some things I want, so I write up something in English, and I give it to her to translate to German. And then when I went back, I had to interview some people, so I took the contract linguist with me to serve as our translator. So they do audio tapes, they do video tapes, they do written documents, and they do translations. And depending on how good your languages, FBI goes on a scale of 1 to 5. 5 being, 5 is for someone who's not a native speaker is almost, you know, unobtainable. But 2 being, 2 plus actually being a, you have to have a 2 plus to be considered fluent. Depending on your fluency determines how much money you make doing that too.
Do they work out of their home or
out of the ones that we have work out of, the office, WFO. You have to come into the office because the documents you're going to be working with, they're all secret and secure. So you come into the office. You can work anywhere between 6 and 60 hours per week under contract and make between $20 and $40 an hour depending on your language capability, how high your level is. They would do the same thing. Or they could do the same thing. They would just get paid more and be an FBI employee, so they would have our, you know, the retirement, the pension, and all those other things would kick in. Now, in order to move up, if you want to become a supervisor or something along that field, you would have to be the full-time employee.
What about the National
Virtual Translation Center? Yeah, got no idea what you're talking about. Never heard of that. But is that federally run? Interesting. No, I have no idea. Maybe on the internet, when you click on to become a contract linguist, they may talk about it there. But outside of that, I don't know if, and I just talked to a linguist the other day about some of what she does. They may pool work out of there. They have a couple sites that they pool work from, but I don't know about that specific place. They will tell you, okay, they will tell you coming out of Quantico, being the amount of money they spent on you, that there is a 2-year commitment. And other things you do, like when they pay for my master's degree, I signed an additional 4-year commitment to the Bureau, which technically doesn't matter because I was already under a 4-year degree because they sent me away to language training. You can sign those. Now, I had people don't always honor them, and I don't know what the penalty is if you don't honor it. But other than that, no. I mean, I know, like, one of the girls I said that came in as a with her law degree, she was from Yale. She came to the FBI. She was only there for two and a half years. Oh, probably not even that, maybe 2 years. And then went back to become like an assistant dean at Yale Law or something like that. And, you know, I don't know what she does there, but I know she's assistant dean, but I don't know exactly what that what that position does. So there's no real time commitment. Right? But most people, our retirement is so swift as an agent. Our pension is so good. There's a time it's like a 98% retirement rate. You know, most people don't leave once they get in. I mean,
but you have to go where they assign you.
At first you do. You have to go where they tell you to go. You technically become eligible to move after 4 years. But actually, I know people that have moved after 3 years, depending on what your background, how specific it is. Yes.
Would you please describe for us the physical fitness test that's required?
The PT test.
Any height, weight requirements that may be included in that?
No height, weight, thank God. As I weigh 270 pounds, I don't think I would ever fit into anybody's height, weight. But the PT test, which is technically why I have to leave in a half hour, there are four events. There is the push-ups, as many push-ups as you can do, perfect protocol. Sit-ups, as many sit-ups as you can do in 1 minute. There is the 300-meter sprint, three-quarters of the way around the track, and then there's the mile and a half. You have to get at least one, it's graded on a 1 to 10, or actually you can get negative. So it's graded on, like, I've known people that got, like, negative 15. When I came in, there were five events. You had to do pull-ups also. They took those out because so many people were failing that particular part. You have to get at least one point in each particular category, and now you have to have a total of 12 points. So with push-ups, like myself, when I first came in, it was out of 50 points. Now it's out of 40. Out of 50 points, I got 10 on the sprint, one on the two. It was at the time with a 2 mile run, and you know, a couple on the sit ups, a couple on the push ups to equal like 30 points. And that's considered passing anything over 15. I will tell people, honest to goodness, it's much harder than you think it is. And it's unfortunate because that's the last thing you do before you become a special agent. You have to pass it before you go to Quantico and three times in Quantico, okay? But you have to pass it in the field before you go to Quantico. And it's the last thing you have to do before you become a special agent and get your class. And I tell people as soon as I talk to them, if you're thinking about applying, let's say the entire process, let's say it's going to take you, you know, however long it takes, I suggest people start working out the same day they apply, because it's not a lot of physical fitness, you know, depending on your background. You know, there was a time when most agents were ex-military or ex-cops, so they were used to those physical fitness requirements. But now with a lot of them being accountants, lawyers, computer people, I mean, I had people, there was a girl in my class who got zero. Zero sit-ups. So how do you get out of the bed in the morning without being able to do a sit-up? But the protocol is very strict, and they come one after another. And it's just unfortunate the amount of people that don't pass it. You do your push-ups first, the most you can do. I think as a female, and I actually have it in my car, you may have to do, I want to say 20 to get 1 point, but don't quote me. Somewhere, maybe between 19 and 20 or something. You know, for every three more you do, you get another point. Sit-ups, you have to do, like, at least for a female, maybe 40 in a minute to get 1 point. Or maybe in the 30s to get 1 point. In the 300-meter sprint, which is almost, it's starting on this end of the track and going all the way over to the other curve, like a minute 9, maybe a minute 10 to get at least 1 point. And on the mile and a half, you maybe have to do it at a 2:30 split, so maybe that's, what's that, 14 minutes? I can't add. I don't know how long that is, but maybe 5, 10, maybe under 14 minutes to do the mile and a half to get 1 point, maybe under 15 minutes to get 1 point, something like that. But it's very, very stressful, because if you're not in shape and that's hanging over your head while you're in Quantico, it can make everything else stressful. You know, they try to make Quantico as stressful an environment as they can to see who can really take it or not. But that's one of the things that hurts people the most, is not being in shape. You don't have to be an athlete. You don't have to be an ex-football player or an ex-baseball player to be in shape. You know, you just have to be able to go out, pass the PT test those four times, and be done with it. And the special agent position is the only position where they take a PT test. Everything else is just a normal office job. I would, automatic disqualifiers are, you have to be a U.S. citizen, one. I would go online to get the exact drug policy, because they're kind of in the middle of changing it. When I came in, the drug policy was, for marijuana, was no more than 20 times in your life and none in the last 5 years, maybe. That's kind of what it was. Now, it's on the harder drugs, there's, I mean, you can't say, you know, I used to smoke crack, or you can't, I'm sure that'll get you disqualified. I don't know, no one's ever said it, but I'm sure that person will get DQ'd. Felonies, you know, you can't be a, you know, a convicted felon as far as getting in the bureau. DWIs, DUIs. I'm not sure what the policy is. I know if it's like a year or two old, they can still phase one you. Now, depending on, now once you're an agent, if you get a DUI, DWI, I think that's, you get put on the bricks. I think that's it. Unless you are on paper alcoholic already. I think that's a bright line violation. But other than that, there's not, other than the drugs and the citizenship and the, you have to be able to pass the PT test.
It's not like in the military where you have, you know, like, you've had severe orthopedic issues and you're permanently disqualified, or if you have seizure problems.
No. We had a guy in my class, very sad, good guy. He had a heart transplant. He already had a heart transplant and became an agent. If you can do the work, and it's one of those things where it's physical while you're in Quantico. I mean, you could be on a mat wrestling for 2 hours. You could be boxing, you know, bull in the ring. You can be running. You can be working out an awful lot in Quantico. Now, it stops the day you get out. You know, you look around the office. Some of these guys haven't they haven't walked or done anything since the day they left Quantico. Now, for the most part, most people stay in fairly good shape, but they're trying to bring back the physical fitness test for people once they leave Quantico. But if you can pass the PT test, and if it's not something that's going to stop you from being able to do your job, you know, I mean, let's say you have a problem with seizures, but if you don't have that problem when you take your medicine, you know, they'll say take your medicine, you know, it's not going to DQ you. That won't happen. It's still, when it's all said and done with, I tell people this all the time, when it's all said and done with, you're still working for the federal government. You know, nobody in the federal government is going to get DQ'd for having asthma. You know, it's not probably the government, you know, it's still a government job. But, so, besides those, there aren't really a lot of physical, you have to be able to do your job. You have to be able to pass the test. Depends on several factors. One, how many agents are they hiring? How competitive are you? And how long it physically takes you to get the things that they want. We go through these hiring binges and purges where, since 9/11, we've hired like over 4,000 agents. You got to figure there are only 12,000 total agents. We've hired 4,000 in the last 5 years. So that's an awful lot. When I applied, it was before 9/11, they were on a hiring freeze where they were bringing people on, but they weren't
giving them their Quantico class. They weren't putting them all the way to the end. So that's one. And two, it really depends on how competitive are you. When I first applied, we'll make it in your situation. Let's say you do graduate from law school and you're 24, 25, whatever it is that you are when you graduate, and you apply under the law program to become a special agent, or you apply and you're entered into the law program. If you're sitting next to the person that graduated and has worked in the, you know, a law firm for 5 years, they have more experience, they're going to beat you out. Okay? So that could take forever until you become only the most competitive person gets to go to the next step. So when I first came out as a teacher, I got a phase one test fairly quick. But only the most competitive people that pass a phase one pass a phase two. So I had to wait a while. I mean, it was other teachers who had more experience than me. So it took me from beginning to end maybe 3 years. I know people that got through in 9 months. You know, it was a guy in my class who had gone to law school. He owned his own computer technology company, and he, you know, spoke French or something. You know, he got through in 8 months because he was so competitive against everybody else. Not somebody like me. I had to wait my turn. So it's really dependent on how many they're hiring. I see these people now that we're doing a lot of hiring, you know, 700-800 agents a year, that's a lot of hiring. I know a guy that became an agent 1 year when they only hired 20 people. I mean, you have to be pretty good to be on 20 out of the 10,000 people apply. They picked 20, you know, you got to be pretty good in those years. So it depends on those two factors.
What about security clearances?
When they do your background check, you will obtain your clearance at that time. You don't have to have it prior. You know, they do it for you. Now, if an issue... Technically, no, because they have to do your background before you're hired, and that's where the security clearance will come from that background check. No, for the most part, clearances don't roll over from agency. You know, we're not going to, you know, let's say you got your clearance when you work for, you know, Lockheed Martin. You know, we're not going to take their word for it that you're a good person. You know, we have to still, you know, most big agencies don't. They don't roll over from one to the next. Oh no, there's no flex. That's it. Quantico is, that's all you'll do.
And what's the starting
pay? It depends on where you live. Now, all agents make the same base. Depending on where you live, you get a locality, and then when you graduate from Quantico, all agents get a what they call availability, which basically is, they give you 25% more of your check all the time, you know. But then if they need you to work 28-hour days, they've already paid you for it. So that kind of works. In D.C., right out of Quantico, and the way the steps go is your GS-10, step 1, 10 step 2, 11 step 3, 12-1, and then, you know, 13. So you get your 13 after 5 years. You may come into D.C. today. Now, obviously, it goes up every year. Like when I came into D.C., we were making like 45. People that graduate today and come to D.C. are making like 65 with a $25,000 sign-in bonus. You know, I mean, I ate noodles and peanut butter for years. And these guys are getting $25,000 cash just for being assigned to D.C. You know, there's no bitterness. I'm just saying, I've had a lot of noodles in my day, and I'm sick of noodles. You may go, in D.C., you may go from 65, 72, you know, 75, 85 to 100. You get to 100 in 5 years. And then you'll go up, that's without going into managers. If you become a supervisor, you go from 100 to 120. That's just for a midline supervisor, 120. And then you'll go up maybe 3, 4, 5,
$1,000 every year for your, the most you can be an agent is 27 years. So, you know, you go up $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 every year, unless you move up the ladder. So those are, regular special agents go up to GS-13. Supervisors go up to 14. Assistant special agent in charge and special agent in charge, 15s. And then when you get like an ADIC or some of the higher positions, those are SES. So as a regular special agent, you'll go maybe from 65 to 100 and then on up from there. Probably not lower money, but I was a teacher, so I was pretty happy.
Hired, okay, we're going to hire you under language, right? Are they now not going to repay your law school loan because that's not what you got hired under?
No, no. That's a good question, and the answer is no. They will. You will apply for the UEP program after your year's up, and every lawyer I've known to apply for got it. So it doesn't really matter what it is. And the reason why it doesn't matter is because when you apply for the UEP program, you're the one writing it out. So you're the one that's going to be writing up, you know, these are my student loans, this is how it helped me become an agent, this is why I need them paid back. That's up to you. So I think you'd still be, I know you'd still be okay. 57. Oh, no, I'm sorry. You can apply up until, you have to be in Quantico by the time you are 37. You have to retire at 57. Most special agents, when they come in, honestly are 28, 29, 30, just because it's so competitive. You know, you can be 23 and apply, but if the guy next to you is 28, he's done something for 5 years longer than you have, he's going to be the one that's most competitive. To do what? Well, this is to apply for a special agent position, to apply for another different position. There are, if you look at that available vacancies, you'll see there are some jobs. Like if something says, you know, executive or SES on there, some of those jobs require advanced degrees. Like a lot of people in our lab, you know, FBI lab down at Quantico, they're almost all doctors down there, you know. And a lot of people that work in our behavioral analyst unit, the profiler unit, those people are almost all doctors also. So it depends on the education and experience.
Like the doctors.
Yes. If you're talking about non-special agent positions,
yeah,
the job that you apply for will determine the education experience that you need. Others. Go ahead.
If you say you want to apply, maybe not to be just a lawyer, do you have to
apply? Not to what?
Pardon?
If you want to apply, not to what?
Not necessarily under the law program.
You do not determine what program you apply to be a special agent under. You apply to be a special agent, then someone looks at your application and determines what background you have, and then they will tell you how you come in. No. Each office is responsible for pushing their people onto becoming an agent. So, no, it doesn't get pulled. It's all going to download to the same applicant coordinator. The same coordinator in our office is called, his name is Steve. He looks at all of them. So, no, one that doesn't get pulled from anything. See, it's not as much, it's more they want these different backgrounds because they have the tool set to do certain amount of work. It's not really, you know, we need another lawyer. We need another accountant. We need another such and such. You know, they're all the same on the inside. It's just these are the positions by which you can become one. Pass on my cards around. If you have any additional questions when we leave here, you can shoot me an email or call.
Do you know anything about the internship program?
Yeah, one of the things I passed out is about the internship program. If the internship program, the Honors Internship, is the absolutely best program we have. Now, most people that come from honors intern roll over very easily into special agents or other big-time jobs in the Bureau. You apply. You have to go online and apply. And the close date, if you want to apply for next summer's honors intern program, is it has to be on my desk by October 10th. So it's a lot of paperwork. So I'm sorry we didn't talk more about that. But go onto that website. Look under students, under Student Center, and go into internship programs. And it'll show you, like, we've got, like, you know, 20, 30 different intern summer internship programs. Some are paid, some are not. But the Honors Intern is the big one that you would probably look into. What they will do is they will take your background and kind of put you in one of the FBI positions that deals with that in particular. So you may be put in the law unit, or you may be put somewhere that kind of works to your background.
Can you deploy as a summer intern?
No.
This is in the area, right?
Everyone works, all the internships are done through headquarters. Now, we've got headquarters here, headquarters in Quantico, headquarters in West Virginia, depending on what particular squad you're put on, that will be determine where you're going to be. One of those three places, though. Most people are in D.C., somewhere in Quantico, but most are in the D.C. area. Others? Nothing? Okay. If down the road you have any additional questions, just shoot me an email or give me a call, and I'll answer them all for you. Thank you all very much.